Good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and a welcome to those monitoring the briefing online or remotely. My name is Margaret Nowicki from the Department of Public Information. As you know, this week is Africa Week, Africa NEPAD Week. Africa Week is organized every year around the time of the General Assembly Special Debate on Africa to help raise awareness of the work of the New Partnership for Africa's Development, NEPAD, and Advancing Development in the continent. Five offices, the African Union's NEPAD Agency, the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa, the Economic Commission for Africa, the African Peer Review Mechanism, and the Department of Public Information have organized a comprehensive program of activities for the week, including today's press briefing. And there are background materials and fact sheets available in the room. With us today, we are honored to have the UN Secretary General's Special Advisor on Africa, Mr. Maged Abdelaziz, the Chief Executive Officer of the NEPAD Agency, Dr. Ibrahim Mayaki, and Ambassador Fatuma Nyorokobwa, the Deputy Chairperson of the African Peer Review Panel of Eminent Persons. Each of the speakers will make brief opening remarks, and following their statements, we will open the floor for questions. We'll begin with UN Secretary General's Special Advisor on Africa, Mr. Maged Abdelaziz. Sir, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Margaret, and thank you for the partnership with the DPI on this very important program. I think that as three holders of our mandate, UN OSA, ECA, and DPI are doing a much more coordinated and much more integrated approach in dealing with African issues, and in particular in support of the NEPAD activities. This Africa Week is very important because it coincides with the 50th anniversary of the Organization of the African Union, AU. It coincides with the 10th anniversary of the APRM. It coincides with the 10th anniversary of the establishment of the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa. And it coincides with many other anniversaries related to NEPAD, with the PIDA and others. And that is why we organized a lot of activities that started on the 21st, as you must have seen, with a high-level panel discussion that was inaugurated by the Secretary General, and with the participation of Professor Mayaki and Ambassador Ndengeza Nyerakobwa and other members of the eminent persons high-level panel from the APRM, Ambassador Ashraf Rashid, and Dr. Mustafa Mikdash, who are also with us in the room today. Today we had a meeting with member states to explain what is in the reports of the Secretary General on the NEPAD and on the causes of conflict and the solutions for durable peace in Africa. Tomorrow we are having a briefing for NGOs, diaspora, women organization, youth organization, academia, and journalists who would like to attend are most welcome to attend. This is also organized with the DPI, and who have been very instrumental in gathering this distinguished group of persons to discuss and to ensure that it is a people-centered approach on African issues. The culmination of this week is going to be on the 25th. It is the discussion of the Africa reports in the General Assembly, which we attach always a great importance to it, and that is why we have our distinguished guests here today to explain to you what exactly is at stake, what is a transformative agenda for Africa, and how are we going to deal with issues like the remaining period of the MDGs, like the post-2015 development agenda, like the SDGs and other configurations that are being negotiated here in the General Assembly. And I would like to thank you for your participation in today's briefing.
Thank you, Mr. Abdelaziz. I would now like to introduce Dr. Mayaki, Chief Executive Officer of the NEPAD Agency. Before he was appointed to his current position, Dr. Mayaki was Prime Minister of Niger between 1997 and 2000. Prior to this, he served as Minister in Charge of African Integration and Cooperation and Minister of Foreign Affairs. Upon leaving the Prime Minister's office in August 2000, Dr. Mayaki founded the Analysis Center for Public Policy in his home country, Niger. Dr. Mayaki, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I would like, first of all, to thank the Office of Special Advisor for supporting the NEPAD process and the APRM process. As you know, NEPAD has been established as the Development Agency of the African Union since its integration in 2010. And being the Development Agency of the African Union, it has a specific mandate on implementation at the regional and national level in domains related to agriculture, transport, energy, education, health. So we serve as a vehicle of implementation of the continental strategies. In the last 10 years, Africa has changed enormously, but there are still very strong challenges. It has changed because, as you know, 6 of the 10 fastest growing economies in the world are Africans. But there are still challenges because 7 of the 10 most unequal economies are also in Africa. So poverty is still high. Transformation has evidently taken place through improvements in governance. And APRM is a sound illustration of these improvements in governance as we have more and more countries adhering to the APRM process. In terms of achievements, it is important to notice that the first big road project in Africa will be finalized in 2014. It is the Algiers-Lagos highway, 4,500 kilometers. There is just a missing link of 80 kilometers to achieve that. In that same space, you will have an optic fiber and a gas pipeline. So very important mega projects are being achieved. And in terms of agriculture, significant improvements have been made in implementing what we call the Comprehensive Agricultural Development Program of a continent by investing more public resources in the sector, by empowering small-scale farmers who, in their majority, are women. So agriculture and infrastructure are two key pillars, but transformation is taking place mainly because governance has improved. And in looking forward to the post-2015 agenda, it will be important for us that the issues that will strengthen that transformation be really picked up. Issues related to productive capacity, to industrialization, to skills development, human capital development, that will strengthen the transformation that is taking place and that will allow us to tackle the challenges that we are still facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mayaki. I would now like to introduce Ambassador Fatuma Nyorokobwa. Ambassador Nyorokobwa currently serves as the deputy chairperson of the African Peer Review Panel of Eminent Persons and also as the deputy CEO of the Rwanda Governance Board. Prior to these positions, Ambassador Nyorokobwa served as the Rwandan ambassador and high commissioner to Tanzania, Malawi, Zambia, Seychelles, and Madagascar. Ambassador, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you very much, Margaret, for giving me the floor. Let me start on behalf of the APRM, take this opportunity to thank OSA for organizing this important commemoration on APRM anniversary so that you can have an engagement at the global level. Ever since the beginning of this year, we've been commemorating APRM anniversary at national level, at continental level, but it's an opportunity really to engage with stakeholders at global level so that you can know what Africa is doing in the area of transformative governance. APRM is a homegrown African-owned instrument that was created in 2003 as an arm to NEPAD because we believe that there cannot be sustainable poverty reduction, cannot talk about sustainable development without transformative governance, and APRM come in really to fill this gap. APRM is the governance flagship of AU. Its purpose is to promote the adoption of policies, standards, and practices that lead to political stability, high economic growth, sustainable development through sharing of experiences, and reinforcement of successful and best practices, as well as addressing identified governance shortcomings. So for the last 10 years, a lot has been achieved by this important mechanism. The most important one is scrutiny by member states, being ready to be scrutinized on how they are performing in the area of governance in the four pillars, one on democracy and political governance, the other one on economic governance and management, corporate governance and socio-economic development. Over the last 10 years, 33 member states have acceded to this mechanism. 17 of them have been peer-reviewed. And this is a process that engages citizens across the board. Citizens' voices from the lowest levels of the communities, civil society, academia, private sector, politicians, including political parties, vulnerable groups, all have an opportunity to share their views and perspectives on how their countries should be governed and critique what is not going well. Through these 10 years of reviews, so many issues of governance have surfaced up. The issue of corruption, really APRM has demystified structural and underlying issues that sometimes are not talked about openly. The issue of corruption, the management of natural resources, the issue of diversity, the question of youth unemployment, the land issue, the proliferation of minerals and all that. So these issues are issues that have come up in APRM, and we've come up with strategic orientation on how they can be dealt with. And I hope moving forward with post-2015 MDG and development agenda, it's important to take into consideration the wealth of the reports of the APRM, the many issues that have been raised and the recommendation, so that they can really take a center stage in the development of this important initiative. APRM has provided a platform for showcasing best practices from Africa. It has enhanced peer sharing and learning of common governance challenges. And in essence, it has even enabled the South-to-South cooperation because Africans are learning from each other. They are sharing experiences. They are sharing the technical capacity building. APRM has also helped in monitoring the implementation of international and African instruments acceded to by member states, thereby contributing to the acceleration of the implementation of their implementation. It has also contributed to the region and African integration through harmonization of policies. But more important, APRM has increased ownership and inclusiveness of all development agenda by Africans and really demystified issues that I have already mentioned. The other issue I want to mention before I conclude is, despite all these important landmarks that have been achieved by APRM, we still have challenges. One of the challenges that many, although it's a great initiative, but it's not so popular, especially many people don't know about it, so we need to popularize this mechanism. Secondly, when it comes to the implementation of the national programs of action, they are very good reports, very good recommendations, but when it comes to implementation, we still have capacity constraints and financial constraints. So briefly, that's what I can say. But moving forward for the next decade, we are thinking on how to strengthen this mechanism. We need the support of the global community. We need the support of all member countries. And of course, we are happy that we are in touch with the OSA. He's been talking about the budget. We hope UN should provide more budget to OSA so that he can continue coordinating and working with Africa to see how we can strengthen this mechanism and to have really the place of Africa and the voices of Africans heard, not only at the national level, continental level, but also at the global stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. We'll now take your questions. Please introduce yourself and your organization to our guests, please.
On behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association, welcome to the briefing and thank you. In fact, I have a question. I know your focus is on development. We've seen some cooperation between the United Nations and the African Union that bears really fruit, were fruitful regarding peacekeeping, let's say. What is there a similar approach regarding education, let's say? Is there any good spots that we can talk about in Africa that making strands in education? Thank you.
Matthew was next. Thanks a lot. Matthew Lee, Inner City Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks to the three of you for coming. I wanted to ask about the review and sort of aid to Africa generally, about what you'd spoken on. It seems like this is an attempt for Africa to sort of assess itself and improve itself and share information on good governance. Meanwhile, you have from outside, you have calls on, you know, cutting off aid based on, I'm thinking of Rwanda, I'm sorry to say, but this recent call to cut off aid based on allegations of child soldiers or assisting M23. What I'd like you to somehow speak about how these two trends relate to each other. And also, on the office of OSA, I'm sorry to ask you this question, but it's come up. The African Union recently had a high-level meeting and said that the Security Council should be asked to defer the prosecution of the Kenyan cases while they're still sitting in office. And it was said that Ban Ki-moon called many heads of state in Africa before that meeting to urge them to not take that position. And I asked, who did he call? They wouldn't answer. They said other administration officials made calls. I wanted to know, did you make calls, or what's the position of OSA on the Secretariat reaching out to heads of state in Africa with that position? Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll take one more. Then yes.
Having lived and worked in Africa, very right, Ambassador. I keep forgetting because I'm sitting in front of you. Having lived in Evelyn Leopold, having lived and worked in Africa, how do you cope year after year with Zimbabwe, with governance, with the deterioration of the economy, and so forth?
Okay, can we have some answers from our panel, please? Yes, please.
Thank you very much. I think for the first question, yes, of course, there is a lot of cooperation in the peacekeeping area, and there is a lot of cooperation also in the education areas being done by the UNESCO. Maybe it's not that much visible here in New York, but there are a lot of programs that are being done regarding education in Africa between UNESCO and the African Union. And with the support of the ECA, which is the United Nations arm that is located in the African continent on the ground. So I will be more than happy to share with you a list of those programs later on that is being conducted. We are not part of that because UNESCO is acting from Paris on that directly with the African Union, but the ECA is more involved in this kind of approach. On the issue of assessment, I will leave it to the other members of the panel. Security Council have been asked to defer. I mean, you must be referring to the summit that have taken place of the African Union on this in this regard. I don't know what phone calls have been made. I personally did not make any phone calls, but I know that there are some phone calls that have been made. And the issue here is that the African continent is fully respectful of the ICC. But, of course, when there are some requests that are coming to the Security Council and that is not being answered or no action is being taken on it, it gives an impression that there is some targeting of some African leaders. What have been decided in the African summit is that a committee of five presidents are going to be undertaking missions. I think they are going to come here to New York. They are going to go to The Hague to meet with the ICC, and they're going to undertake this kind of interactive and to present a report to the African summit before the 20th. So let us not jump into the conclusions on this particular one. Let us wait to see, because there is also a voice that Africa should remain committed to the ICC ideals, but with finding some proper solution to issues when it comes to the prosecutors or the ICC interviewing a sitting president in office. That is also a very political, legal, and all kind of issues that can be addressed. I think there are some other parts of the questions, maybe.
Thank you very much for the questions. The first one is on the review. On Rwanda, I won't go so much into Rwanda because I'm not representing Rwanda, but I'll talk briefly as a citizen of Rwanda who is living there and my perspectives. But on the APRM process and the review, yes, APRM is a self-monitoring instrument that assesses governance in Africa in the four pillars that I mentioned. It's a process, and maybe quickly I'll tell you the five stages. The first stage, there's national self-assessment, and this has to be inclusive and participatory of all stakeholders, citizens, civil society. They have the forum to provide their views on all the review process, on the governance in their country, and then a draft report and preliminary national program of action is prepared and submitted to the APR secretariat. The stage two is the country review team visit the country to undertake wide consultation with stakeholders. Then you also have a stage on drafting the report by the country review team. But what I can say without going so much into the details is that this self-assessment process, one, is very competent, is free from political manipulation. Thirdly, all the voices of the people you can imagine, whether you talk about persons with vulnerability, women, youth, farmers, they are all part of the process. Even the governing structures that manage this process at the national level are really inclusive. In many cases, they are led by the civil society. And that's why we've been saying even here in the morning that there's no way you can talk about post-2015 development agenda or the post 2063 Africa agenda without referring to the wealth of information you have from the APRM reviews and reports. For the 33 countries that represent about 76% of Africa. So I think this is a resource that has to be captured by the international community. When you talk about African governance, think about APRM, because otherwise it's just reinventing the wheel and wasting resources that should be taken to other places. The issue on Rwanda, and I'll talk globally on that, I think for the past 50 years or so, ever since we attained so-called independence, I think it's just independence in terms of changing the flags, but I don't think really we are independent yet because we don't have economic independence and we don't speak for ourselves. I think the narrative of Africa has been shaped by outsiders. Very little about Africa is known. The great success stories, like the APRM we've been talking about, NEPAD, and many other success stories. You go to Rwanda after 94 genocide, 19 years only down the road, the country is reconciled. Victims and perpetrators are living side by side, no revenge. CNN or any other media doesn't pick on that. You talk about education, universal access to education in most African countries. Yes, MDGs. Some countries are not going to be able to attain the MDGs, but I'm sure Rwanda is going to attain most of the MDGs. Gender equality, Rwanda is number one now. Over 64% of women parliamentarians today with the speaker. These stories are not out, and I can go on. If you look at media on what is happening in Egypt or where, you can think heaven is falling. But you talk to Ambassador Rashif, he says, no, this is exaggerated. So I would wish really to have a balanced narrative on Africa, and I think this is what we are doing. The question of Congo and the M23 and what, it's a long story. But I think what the world is doing, especially through the UN framework for peace, maybe could be the right framework. Because isolating the issue of M23, because the problem of Congo is a governance problem. It's a governance deficit. The issue of management of natural resources that have been raised in our reports, these are the issues. And sometimes when you talk about exploitation of the minerals, we look at Africa, don't look at the West. But where do they sell the minerals? What about these multinationals and the contracts? So it's again who manages this narrative. And I think it's high time for us as Africans to start telling our story. And we want you as international community to bring out the positive stories about Africa, because this is the stories of hope. And APRM have showed we are not angels, we have challenges, but they are also good stories, and we are ready to confront our challenges. Thank you very much.
Three questions. One, two, three.
Thank you. Sherman Briceby, South African Broadcasting. My question is for Dr. Miyake. Sir, a number of your policies are now at an operationalization point. 51 projects you've identified around Africa, PIDA being one of them, CAADP being the other one. You talk about the two centerpieces, the two pillars. How concerned are you? I mean, the World Bank estimates $93 billion will be required annually to close these infrastructure gaps in Africa. How concerned are you about where the money A is going to come from? And given the vast amounts that we are talking about, how concerned are you about the issue of corruption that could undermine the implementation of these projects?
Yes, Mr. Abadi.
Thank you. I am Abadi from the dossier paper. I thank the panelists for this briefing. I have two specific questions. To Ambassador Abdelaziz, the peer review has identified very crucial issues of governance in Africa, including corruption. What specifically it is suggested to reduce or eliminate corruption? And my other question is to Dr. Mayaki. You did mention infrastructure in Africa, and specifically a highway going from Algiers to Lagos. Could you give some description of this highway, when it will be finished, and what the objective of the highway is? Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Ahmed Fathi. I'm from Al Wafd News of Egypt. And my question for the distinguished panel, for many years we have been hearing about the African continent and the need to address the issues of poverty and security. Yet we see the security situation in many parts of the continent not at best condition. We have several peacekeeping operations in the continent, in Darfur, in Mali, in DRC, et cetera, et cetera. How far the African nations now, African governments, are moving on the issue of development? We understand that the meeting the Millennium Development Goals are not really achievable for many parts of the continent. What kind of options is the African countries are contemplating, and what can organizations such as NIPED and how can OSA also assist in this manner, since there are parts of the United Nations that's working directly with the African Union rather than through a centralized process? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anna, please.
Okay. There are two questions related to infrastructure, and I will start by them. From the 1960s to the 2000s, 80% of the funding of Africa's infrastructure has been made on domestic resources, public funding, which means the roads, the bridges, ports have been essentially constructed through public funding. Two, domestic resources have been multiplied by more than four. Today, the public revenue on the continent is over $500 billion. Christine Lagarde, in one of her trips in Africa, said, Africa's public finances today are better managed than Europe's public finances. And if they are better managed than Europe's public finances, according to Christine Lagarde, it's because governance has improved. Three challenges remain very strongly because PIDA, as a strategic framework for infrastructure development, will have the objective of boosting intra-African trade. And intra-African trade will really be a key dimension of our industrialization. So the gap for the financing of these 50 projects is quite important. So in that case, public-private partnerships will be essential. I mean, bringing private sector operators to join governments in public-private partnerships. And there also governance is important because the ease of doing business rules and norms will have to be set. Regulatory frameworks will have to be ensured. So these elements, which are governance elements, are also being improved. If we look at the IFC figures, in terms of FDI in the last 3 years, Africa has been one of the strongest regions in the world. So if we are able to attract FDI, it's for two reasons. Improvements in governance on one hand, and on the second hand, it's a lesson which is derived from the financial crisis. The financial crisis was dealing with artificial instruments, and most of private sector operators want to go back to the real economy, and Africa is a place where you can really foster a real economy. On the highway between Algiers and Lagos, that highway is almost completed. It's 4,500 kilometers. The missing link is 80 kilometers within Niger. It crosses Algeria, goes through Niger, and up down to the port of Lagos. The main objective of that highway will be to create a development corridor, because it will facilitate there also trade. It will facilitate with the implementation of an optic fiber access, a greater access to IT, to internet. So the fact of having a development corridor boosted by a transport scheme will be absolutely fundamental for the development of a region. Besides these, this highway, I need to emphasize the fact that we have several important regional projects. You have the Brazzaville-Kinshasa bridge, which will be completed by a road and a rail. You have the Dakar-Bamako rail revitalization within the Dakar-Djibouti corridor. You have the north-south corridor in southern Africa, which will put optic fiber on rails on various segments. So there are really important projects which have a political support and which are waiting for the attraction of private sector investment. In Dakar, in December, 13 and 14 of December, the president of Senegal, as head of the NEPAD Heads of States Committee, will organize the Dakar Financing Summit, which will concentrate on 16 key regional projects and allow a dialogue between policymakers at the highest level and private sector operators, African private sector, external private sector, to look at how to best implement each one of these 16 projects. And we have been working in the last 18 months in having a fine-tuning of these projects so that the dialogue can be a very constructive one.
Well, thank you very much. With regard to the question of Mr. Abadi about the corruption issue, you started saying that the APRM have recognized that corruption is a country-specific problem that varies from one country to another, and the causes are different from one country to another. Yes, there has been recognition by the APRM that in certain countries there are problems of corruption, but the APRM is a self-evaluating mechanism that does not get the United Nations involved in addressing those issues. So it is a peer review mechanism among heads of state of the African Union. And the African Union, there is a first phase and the second phase. In the first phase, the panel already evaluate and it reaches conclusions and it is being discussed by the heads of state. And then they give recommendations to the country concerned. And then in the second phase, they evaluate what have been done to implement those recommendations vis-a-vis the corruption or any other issue that of concern of, among the governance structures. So we do not have at the United Nations neither the mandate nor the request from the African Union or from the peer review to do anything on these particular issues that are a result of the APRM. But of course, corruption, as you know and I know, is being dealt with by the UNODC in the United Nations system. My office has no direct link in addressing the issue of corruption, if that is the question that is being asked. The question with regard to the relation between development and peace and security. There is increasing recognition that development and of the nexus between development and peace and security. And that was very clear in the Secretary General's visit to the Great Lakes region with the President of the World Bank and the commitment from the World Bank to allocate $1 billion for the economic activities that would help in overcoming the security, peace and security situation in the Great Lakes region. And that is going to happen again in the Sahel region fairly soon. So there is the United Nations is moving with this kind of recognition, trying to balance between achieving economic, because economic prosperity and economic activities, as Dr. Mayaki have said, are going to lead to peace and security, and vice versa. In order to do economic activities, you need peace and security on the ground in order to attract FDIs and other other activities. So this nexus, we are very much attached to it, and we have already a report, several reports about this issue. I will be able to supply you with copies of these reports, and we keep stressing this issue in each and every report that is coming in the General Assembly. That's why we have two reports. We have a report on the NIPAD and a report on the causes of conflict on Africa. And these two reports are interlinked and being dealt with together at the same time, and they're going to be discussed on the 25th in the General Assembly. Ambassador, you want to add something? On corruption? Okay. You want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to say one word on corruption. There have been studies done at the level of the Economic Commission for Africa with Nepal and the World Bank. And when you look at the illicit financial flows, most 75% of these illicit financial flows are not linked to corruption. They are linked to tax evasion. It's about multinational not paying their taxes. So that's the main source of illicit financial flows. So I just wanted to make that precision, yeah. Okay.
The next three questions.
Dr. Mayaki, we keep hearing about economic growth, African economic growth. And let us be honest. Within the African region, African continent, poverty is a critical issue. Why has this African growth not translated to more jobs and better life for the African people? Then Ambassador Niyakua, 10 years after APRM was established, 33 countries have joined and 17 have just signed up the peer-reviewed. Why do you think other countries are reluctant to join? Or do you think the regional bodies such as ECOWAS and SAD could do something to encourage other members to sign up? Thank you.
Yes, the lady in the blue shirt.
Thank you. My name is Tawajan Nubi, Kuwait News Agency. My question is for Dr. Mayaki, but I would like also to have Undersecretary General Abdelaziz's views on that from the UN perspective. African summit is going to be held later next month in Kuwait. So what are your expectations? Do you think it will contribute to the realization of any of the ambitious projects you outlined? Thank you.
Oh, sure. My name is Erol Abdovich. I'm representing Web Publica and Anadolu News Agency. And the question was actually, while you was talking regarding the public funding of the infrastructure and regarding the public sector and other direct investments, etc., could you still identify what are those other investments, that where they're coming from? And would you probably say if there is any involvement of the Turkish capital in investing in any kind of projects? Thank you.
Thank you. Panelists, please.
On the issue of poverty, you are absolutely right. The challenges of poverty are very important because poverty is still massive. So we have been growing, as I was saying, 6 of the 10 fastest economies in the world are in Africa. But I added 7 of the 10 most unequal economies are in Africa. In terms of Gini coefficient, we are the most unequal continent in the world. So it shows clearly that there is a challenge in tackling poverty. So what does it mean? It means that growth will need to be more inclusive. So what does inclusive growth mean? It means access of a basic citizen to basic services. It means creation of jobs for the youth. And creation of jobs for the youth means mainstreaming in every public policy job creation for the youth, whether it is an energy policy, a transport policy, or an education policy, evidently. Thirdly, inclusive growth means empowering local communities. What does empower local communities mean? It means that the resources of the central state have to beneficiate the locally decentralized level. So the means to attain that are known, and the strategies are being forged in a dynamic way. Now, we tend to look at policies as a rational process. You know, we think rationally, we set an objective, we look at means, and we organize to attain the objectives. But policies are not only a rational process. They are also the product of a power relationships process. And what is happening in Africa is the growing strength of the civil society, the growing strength of organized farmers' association do play a role in shaping the policies that are being taken today. And this change is an important change, and it is very well reflected in most of the reports of EAPRM. So inclusive growth will be essential because 75% of our population are under 25, and governance-wise, it will not be sustainable not to have an inclusive growth. Secondly, on the issue of the Arab-Africa summit that will take place, the African Union and its NEPAD agency will be present at the summit. And one of the key issues that will be looked at is the issue of infrastructure funding, financing. And I think it will be important to demonstrate the fact that it can be interesting to buy for sovereign wealth funds to buy a highway in the United States, but it can be as much as interesting to invest in a very long African highway. And I think we have reached the stage now where we can demonstrate through technically feasible data that sound projects have sound returns in terms sound returns on the investment that are made. Turkey is becoming a key actor in Africa's development, and many cooperation links are being developed, not only at the bilateral level, but also at the continental level and at the regional level. So there also, I'm repeating myself, but infrastructure is one of the key priorities that will be looked at. We know that Turkey has been present in the domain of education for a long time, without that being really known in many African countries. But in that transformation process in which we are, infrastructure will be key. So I just want to highlight the fact that yesterday I was at the Harvard Kennedy School, and a student asked me, but infrastructure per se is not a factor of development, because it has to be embedded in a long-term strategy, et cetera. So this is what we are really looking at. The improvements of governance helps expand our strategic thinking for the long term. And by strategically thinking for the long term, we are more able to own our own policies. So when we talk about infrastructure, it's not infrastructure per se. It's infrastructure for industrialization, infrastructure for agriculture, infrastructure for education, infrastructure for IT. And all these elements together are really what allows Africa to move. In the telecommunication industry, which is a complex industry, Africa has made huge leaps. So, and if these huge leaps have been possible in the telecommunication industry, they can be done in other domains too.
Thank you. The question on why 33 countries have acceded to the mechanism and only 17 peer-reviewed, what are the challenges, what could be the challenges or reasons for this? One, APRM is a voluntary process. You don't force anybody to join. It's free entry. So for us, 10 years having 33 countries joining is a great landmark because that covers over 75% of Africa. Of course, we want more to join. The question of why are these others not being peer-reviewed? Peer review is a very complex exercise, very comprehensive. Recently I was saying it's just like opening your house for someone to come and check whether your kitchen is clean, your bedroom is fine. So you know these issues of democracy, human rights, access, legitimacy, they are very complex issues. So sometimes a country can accede, but when it comes to peer review, there are many questions. If someone is planning an election next year, maybe you don't want to open everything. But we continue encouraging countries. But the biggest challenge that countries have had is the question of resources, because it's quite expensive. You undertaking this exercise in terms of financial and also capacity gaps. So these are some of the challenges. The other issue is the fact that maybe we haven't been able to communicate more effectively to more member countries and also connecting with most of the African population. That's where the civil society have a huge role to play, where the media can also come in, including yourself, where the academia can come in. So we need to see everybody engage in this process, the sharing of best practices. So I think there is a lot that you can improve to be able to attract more countries. But the last question, the other issue is the issue of value addition. Because someone says, okay, I'm going through this exercise, so what do I get in turn? But of course, the question that you are raising about why is it that growth rates in Africa are very high, yet economic development is low. The question is issues of governance. If you cannot address the issue of corruption, the issue of income inequalities, the issue of service delivery, the issue of natural resource management, diversity, these are barriers to governance. So I think we need to popularize this mechanism, and I hope maybe by next decade all the African countries will be part of this mechanism.
Thank you. We only have time for two more questions. George and Evelyn.
George Baumgarten, Nation Media Group, East Africa. First, for Dr. Mayaki, forgive me, I'm an old rabbit student of geography, and you said a couple of things that set off lights in the back of my head. On this highway that is being built from Algiers, I think it was, down to Lagos, first, when do you expect that last 50 miles, 80 kilometers to be finished? And two, may I assume that and hope and pray that it doesn't go anywhere near the Boko Haram country, that it goes down like down the west side of Nigeria into Lagos, which is in the extreme southwestern corner. Also for Ambassador Abdulaziz, all right, I'll just take sit with this question. Thank you.
Evelyn Leopold again. Africa is a very big place. It's hard to speak of Africa as a whole. and you have 50 countries. Is there a particular region that you see is you could point to for the greatest leap in growth and development? And then my previous question, did you do a peer review in Zimbabwe?
Thank you.
Zimbabwe is not yet a member of the APRM. Mm.
Looking forward to a new Cairo to Cape Town highway. No?
Mm. Cairo to Cape Town, yeah. Mm. The Algiers Lagos highway will be certainly finalized towards the end of 2014. Now, you're referring to Boko Haram. There is no government that does it planned by taking into account terrorist interests. So we plan our infrastructure projects according to our long-term economic benefits and social benefits. But thinking about if Boko Haram is there or not there, or if terrorists in Mali are there or not there, is not really a factor in the planning process. That said, the way these issues are being tackled regionally help a lot in ensuring that security does increase. So this is what I would like to say and really to thank DPI very warmly about your hospitality and your kindness. Well, if you look at the indicators, the East Africa is doing quite well. The EAC, the East African Community, is a very robust regional economic community. But I'm just talking technically as the head of a technical agency looking at technical indicators. Now, the movement of regional integration throughout all Africa is quite important. And you see, Mali could not have been solved without a strong ECOWAS. So a strong ECOWAS has helped solve the issue of Mali. The issues related to Zimbabwe are being tackled within SADC, whatever issues they can be. So the regional groupings do play an important role. And within the architecture of the early warning system, they play a key role of the African Union. So regional integration is progressing. And in the subsidiarity principle, the African Union listens enormously to the regional economic communities in moving its agenda at the regional level.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid we'll have to close here. I would like to thank our guests very much for joining us today, and thank all of you for coming. Good afternoon.